All right, this is your transatlantic bridge between Stockholm, Sweden and Harlem, USA. You are listening to This Moment, and we're so glad to be have you listening to This Moment. And I am so glad to be in conversation with you, my dear brother, Chef Marcus Samuelson. Marcus, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's been a big week, and I feel like spring is coming to New York, and March is always that month, is that bridging month, right? We still got a little winter, but you still also here in New York definitely got some spring. So I'm excited. I took Zion ice skating last weekend in the park, and this weekend it's probably biking or, you know, like really spring stuff.
That's the thing about New York, is that you can have like the temperature shifts in New York just in a day. You know, could be from like having to wear a heavy coat to walking around in a t-shirt within one single day. So absolutely. You were ice skating last week, and today is like biking in the park weather.
Yeah, it's that. And we were actually talking about it this morning when, you know, just like you take your daughter to school and do the pickups, I take Zion. I walk in the mornings to school with Zion. And that's where we kind of start. When you get to Thursday, we start planning sort of what is our weekend stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just, you know, a lot of birthday parties for his friends and school friends and stuff like that. But this weekend, I think we're pretty clean and we can actually, you know, go get into our stuff.
Do some stuff. Yeah.
So I'm excited.
So what is he like doing? What is he into right now? He's five, right?
Yeah, 4.5. So anything being a boy, anything that is speed and danger and crash and smash.
That's not just being a boy. My daughter is the same way, brother, you know. Sweden also in March is not, I usually say that, you know, if Prince lived here, it would be, you know, the song would be called Sometimes It Snows in June, you know, because it often snows in April, but sometimes it snows even in June, but March definitely. So we had snow all week, but my daughter still wanted to ride her scooter on the sidewalk today. And I'm like, it's not a great idea, but she's like, I really want to ride my scooter. And so she's zooming along, there's snow, slush, and they put out this gravel on the sidewalks to prevent people from slipping. So it's like impossible to ride one of these small scooters. Going really fast, crashing and like falling down and scraping her hands. And yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, this is what you wanted to do. Now we're doing it.
Yes.
Anyway, Marcus, I wanted to dive in. You know, last week's episode, we had to do it. We had to speak about, you know, honestly, one of our heroes and a big hero in Sweden, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Absolutely. And his comments and his kind of unwarranted criticism of LeBron James. And of course, there's been a lot of reactions, you know. We knew it was going to be a hot potato. And I just want to say this to all our listeners. You know, Zlatan is a big hero for both Marcus and myself. No doubt about it. That's why we really needed to address this thing. That doesn't mean that we agree with everything he does. Quite the contrary. It also doesn't mean we agree with everything in LeBron James' track record, you know. So we were talking specifically about the situation, but Marcus, I just wanted to share an email we got from one of our listeners. And this email was so beautifully written that, and so kind of insightful and loving. And it just, you know, knowing that we have listeners like this man, his name is Roland Williams, just makes me feel like doing this moment is so worth it.
No, it matters. This is the type
it matters.
Of force that we want.
Yeah. And it's a long email, but he says, you know, Zlatan is certainly entitled to speak his mind. The question is, why did he label LeBron's impact work off the court as political? Was this some sort of unfettered remorse about the striker in the mirror? With all the technology in the world, why couldn't he repair the damage to his hometown? That's one to think about. Would an illustrious career in football end like the statue bearing his likeness? Zlatan's accusation, coupled with his misuse of terminology, are clearly telltale signs that he's wrestling with a few things, and that's okay. As you put it, maybe this will serve as a proverbial red card, but let's hope that while he's on the sidelines, he has a chance to reflect and reckon with his legacy, turn it all around, borrow the page on activism from LeBron's playbook, search for Colin Kaepernick on Google, and wonder why it reads activist as opposed to athlete or quarterback. And maybe, just maybe, he can fuel one more 30-yard bicycle kick for his own Akron.
Amazing.
Thank you
right?
so much. Thank you, Roland Amazing. Williams. Thank you for listening. And thank you for sharing that just loving and insightful kind of wisdom with us.
And very poetic. You know what I mean? All of those things.
Very.
And I think also, like, first of all, like, we want people to be inspired by our heroes like Zlatan, right? And that's why we put so much into it. It's very hard for Americans to understand how big a phenomena Zlatan is in Sweden, right? It's larger than life times 10. But then also at the same time, like we talked about, for me, Zlatan shows his humanity. He shows that he is far from perfect, which no one is, right? But it also shows his ignorance, and that's okay, because within that there's opportunity to actually get knowledge,
reflect
and you know, come back, and hopefully this can be a great turnaround, right? We've all done it in movies. It happens in storytelling. It happens in my own life. You know, when you've done your biggest mistakes, that's also one of the opportunities to come back to fullest. And if this becomes the big turnaround, and 10 years later we look at a huge sort of Zlatan school in Malmö for inner city kids that we talk about activism, so be it. That's what we're hoping for. And that's why you and I put so much on this, because we really think there's hope there.
Two things about that, Marcus, is that Zlatan being such a hero to so many in this country speaks to, one, that there have been so few heroes with Muslim names of clear you know, immigrant background heroes, you know, Blatter. And secondly, also that he's, I don't think I'm overstating it by saying the greatest Swedish football player to ever live. And football means a lot to people. You know, I've
not at all,
you know, I know football has meant a lot to you in your life, Marcus, and you're also a very good football player. I was never a great football player, but in 1994, when Sweden won the bronze medal in the World Cup, it was such a big deal in Sweden that it was, and the two heroes, you know, there are three heroes. It was the goalkeeper, Ravelli, but it was also Martin Dahlin and Henke Larsson. And this was the first time that I saw Sweden just on a national level celebrate two Afro-Swedish people. And that made, you know, that made them and that whole happening so important to me, because a part of their success, a part of their glory also kind of, you know, made me shine a little more, and my dad and my friends, you know, all our Afro-Swedish community got a piece of that, glory. And I think that's what Zlatan's, I think that's what Zlatan's, standing here means to the Blatter community, the immigrant community, the people with non-European backgrounds, black, brown, BIPOC, Swedes, people with Muslim names in this country. So
I think that soccer is very often a window in, right? Like, culture is always a window in. I mean, there's a couple of examples, right? When France hosted the World Cup, they had a choice to make, and this has been documented. It's like, if we're going to win this, we're going to have to bring... We have to decide, are we going to have an all-white French team, or are we actually going to have a chance to win it? And they brought in
their best
all
players.
The different
Mbappe.
The best players. And they come from you know, West Africa, and they come from the Caribbean, and they won the World Cup in 1998.
And they come from the Maghreb. Zidane, and, you know.
Exactly. And the Zidane, you know, with his Algerian background and so on, you know, became sort of the focal of that, right? But it was a real choice. Even when Germany won the World Cup, in 2014, you know, they brought in people like Mesut Ozil that became the clear sort of like hero there. And that was the first time really where sort of Turkish Germany, a huge part of immigrant Germany, saw themselves represented in Germany. So in Europe, in America, we call it very often BIPOC, right? But in Europe, in Sweden, for example, the Black community is also part of the Blatte community, which is sort of could be a derogative word, but it's also a word of if you can be empowered by, like, and these communities very often work as one, but there's always going to be challenges and differences within this community. And I do think that the word activism is just something that Zlatan is not fully aware of yet. And it could be because his bubble as an athlete hasn't looked outside that. But I would say the opportunity of being a privileged athlete allows you to look outside that community more than ever and become an activist and become a fighter for the people with the lesser means, because that's going to open up another side. And he can touch not only Swedes, but Europeans in a completely different level
exactly.
once he entered that. And I think we should have this moment where we actually break down what the word Blatte, essentially where it came from, what it means. Because there is a word that, you know, we have to unpack and we have to kind of like explain for an hour.
And again, Zlatan being wrong in this instance doesn't mean that his contribution to Sweden, his exemplar in Swedish society of being, you know, the most successful person with a Muslim last name in this country and what that's meant to and inspired people in this country doesn't erase that. It just means that, you know, that he's got more realizing, reckoning and thinking to do. That's all. And we all do. Hit us up. Our email is thismomentpodcast@gmail.com. That's thismomentpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Good, bad. You might make the show.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, President Biden is set to sign his landmark
nearly $2 trillion relief bill.
He's calling the American Rescue Plan.
You understand, this isn't transitional. This is transformational.
It's clear that an overwhelming percentage of the American people, Democrats, independents, our Republican friends, have made it clear, the people out there, made it clear they strongly support the American Rescue Plan.
The big thing in the news now, and it's been all over the headlines in Sweden too, is the stimulus package.
This is actually the day for me when America had taken a serious step in to become part of the first world. What do I mean by that, right? These are things that Europe and other leading countries in the world have had forever. So to get a $300 check for your child might not sound like a lot, but it is a lot. And it can go towards childcare at home. It can go to so many other different things, and it will cut child poverty by half in this country. That is massive. Do you know how many parents had to stop working? You know how many single mothers had to stop working and homeschool their kids during the pandemic because they couldn't afford to go to work that paid maybe minimum wage and have their kids at the same time? Now they could actually afford to keep their job, get this check, and build on something, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe afford to keep that car, maybe afford to keep that childcare support so they can go out and get extra overtime out, whatever it might be. This is massive. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the previous administration's stimulus package, it wasn't a stimulus package. It was really, hello, how are all the big companies doing and how can I help them? You know, when an institution like Harvard gets $7 million, it's not a stimulus package that impacts people. This is a real stimulus package that impacts real people. The fact that we're now going to have healthcare, the fact that we're now going to have childcare, this is what England, France, all these other countries, Sweden, and America constantly
take for granted. Yeah.
Yes. But it's also
basically the American state head on tackling its issues of poverty.
Yeah. And but it's also
poverty is very real for a lot of Americans.
Of course. But it's also these countries that America constantly compares itself to. These countries have been doing this since at least the 50s. My second part about it is, for me, as a restaurateur, as a chef, $28 billion was carved out for the restaurant industry. And this is massive. This is massive, right? Because it means that the mom and pop restaurants that doesn't have the same opportunity as I have, I can do cooking classes online. We can figure out how to negotiate with our landlord. This means that, you know, when you drive from Kennedy Airport and you go through Queens and you see all of those mom and pops, half of them are not closed, Jason. Half of them, right? Imagine that. Like half of the restaurant, what makes Queens Queens, is a big part of these mom and pop restaurants. Now, they're going to have access to get a check. And now they can start to restore and open. And each one of those windows, don't think about them as windows or restaurants only. Think about them at each place. There's about 12 on average people working, right?
In each restaurant.
So now our next thing, this is something we fought for a long time with Independent Restaurant Coalition. And it gave me goosebumps when I was on a call this week with Majority Leader Schumer. And
wow.
He was talking to all of us, right, how hard they fought about it. So this is actually something, Independent Restaurant Coalition didn't exist a year ago. We built it, we pushed, we got access to Congress, and eventually through a lot of people, we got this through. So I'm just saying, voting matters, right? Mm-hmm. The Republicans' answer to the $1.9 trillion stimulus package was a $600 billion stimulus package. That's what they want to do. Guess what? The child care is out of there. The helping the restaurant bill is out of there, right? All these things that are actually going to transform America into actually a more secure place would have been ripped out. So that vote that everybody fought for in Atlanta that actually made the House, and obviously with Vice President Kamala Harris, that mattered. It changed it changed the course for millions of Americans. And on a selfish note, I got my second shot.
When are you coming to Stockholm?
yes. It was amazing.
Congratulations, brother. So your whole your wife has it too, or
no? So I took it because of in terms of restaurant worker, we were classified as first responders, so we could go. I signed up early and I hear all kinds of stories how people are in my industry are doing it, whether they get the text and they can be at the Javits Center at 2:36, like my friend Mark Murphy, in the morning to do it. He did that.
Big up Mark Murphy, listener of this moment. Shout out.
But yeah, you know,
so you just got a text and you had to jump over there.
No, I got a couple of days notice because he did the one shot and I did the two shot. But I thought about it it was humbling, man. It was really humbling. Like, first of all, think how many people, the volunteers are in there, Jason. They're volunteers. They don't get paid for being there. They're just doing it because it's right for our community. The incredible nurses and doctors, the massive amount of teamwork it takes to make this incredible thing happen.
And think about this, Marcus, that 14 months ago, we barely knew what this virus was. You know, COVID-19 was brand new, And 14 months later, there's already a vaccine and you've got it, you know. That's pretty incredible. That speaks to what humans can accomplish when we need to, when there's a crisis, and when we want to.
Which also means that in 14 months, hopefully, can we fix racism? Because if we can find... No, why not? You just said it. Why
that's
not?
It's an old pandemic, my brother. It's not going to be fixed in Sweden, but if you could do it in the United States, that would mean a lot to us over here in the cold north. But
speaking about shout outs, I'm going to give you a big shout out. Shout out to my queen, Megan Diana, you know, because she's definitely, you know, turning up the conversation about race and class and culture in one of the oldest institutions as we know of, when you think about the sort of the whole British system. And, you know, it's a tough battle, but, you know, I would say she's raising so many questions there. I think that's why it's become such a big conversation in Britain, because it's touching on race and class.
What's up with the Meghan Diana, though?
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities, right? You think about, first of all, think about Prince Harry, right? His mother died in a paparazzi hunt and a hunt that was just going on forever. And she brought up mental health issues. She brought up a depression. She went to
Africa. She was ostracized by the same family. Yeah.
And then now he had to leave his country, leave all of that he was raised with, to at least to save his marriage and to be a husband. So, and so he has given up a lot, and they've figure out how to come together. And I just think it's very refreshing to see how a couple that is on that sort of magnitude are dealing with this and are bringing up conversations like being depressed, like being talking about mental health on a global stage, and obviously race, right? It is something I just think that she's bringing up these conversations that are so important. And I know the Monica don't want to talk about it. And you know, even Prince William's answer is we are not racist. And again, he's stuck in the act of the words of racism. But I'm sorry, as an institution, when you have colonized countries across the world, I'm sorry to say,
the planet,
you are part of a racist system. It doesn't mean that your family may or may not use the N-word. That's not what we're talking about. You are actually part of a systemic system.
Well, I mean, it's hard for the British crown to say anything else. It's one of the richest royal families in the world. I mean, you know, so much of that wealth is built on the blood and sweat of people on the Indian continent, you know, and the African continent, the North American continent, South American continent, the Caribbean. It's just, there's no kind of getting around the weight of history that rests on the shoulders of the British crown. So it's really kind of laughable when he says we're not at all, or whatever his answer was, but that they're not a racist family.
But wouldn't it be refreshing, though, to have a conversation I think it's racism 101. It's like day one in class. No, you are super sophisticated. I understand that this is not around the sandbox, whether you said the N-word or not. I get that. But you can also acknowledge the taxes and the free labor and the incredible system where, you know, your country and your institution has benefited from. Whether it's Jamaica or Ghana or, you know,
India. Pakistan. So it's still getting around it.
You know, it for me, it was just dude, come on, man. Your answer needs to be a little bit more deep tissue than that, because we get it. You are super sophisticated. I'm not actually accusing you for doing that, but I'm saying I have to acknowledge my privilege and being raised in the system that I've been the enormous benefiter of. That would have been refreshing, right?
Absolutely. Another small kind of detail that I noticed in it was that Harry and Meghan went from having the British crown, so the Queen paying their bills, to, you know, now it's Tyler Perry. So big up Tyler Perry. There, you know, he set them up in one of his houses. I thought that was kind of a boss move, you know.
Oh, it's definitely. Like,
oh, you can stay in one of my places. No problem, man.
No, but so, the biggest boss of them all is Oprah. Her.
Yeah. Okay.
her face.
Oprah's like.
It was just brilliant.
The queen is like, no, not Oprah. Don't go on Oprah. The impact of Oprah Winfrey. I mean, we can speak about that for a moment. Just the power of her, you know, word and her platform is amazing. That also speaks to what we, you know, reconnects back to Zlatan. Is just, you know, Oprah has just consistently used her platform to kind of dive into things and, you know, guests cry on her show and but also addressing issues, you know. Shout out to Oprah Winfrey.
But Jason, I got to bring it back to this year, right? This weekend, Jason, it's actually exactly a year ago you came here and you and I, we were so excited because, hold up a second. Today, I wanted to address March 15. I mean, this spring, this March is really a significant time. Not just for me, but for a lot of us, for so many different reasons. It's the 1 year anniversary on Breonna Taylor, and just thinking through that horrific night. It's also the 1 year anniversary of when we closed our restaurant and converted to a community kitchen, and we closed everything. You know, Jason came back to Harlem to shoot his drop of Midnight, and we were just like, you know, really excited about that, but at the same time also nervous about the virus. And we've been hearing about the virus at that point for about 5 weeks, but now it really became serious. I was extremely scared.
I remember just sitting with you here in New York, and we were doing a talk around your book, and you were also having a performance, you practice, you're performing in our basement in Ginny's. And on the lighter note, all of that changed, right? It was not just about those performances that happened, but that was the smallest thing out of all of that that was ripped away from us, right? I remember we were walking in Harlem, and actually you and I were walking up to Marjorie at the parlor. And then the next day you were heading out to Chicago. But what a year. What is this year meant for you and your family? And just a recap for you.
Yeah. It's been, you know, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, right? Just like with, I'm still dealing with residual effects of having had Corona about 2.5 months ago. And the kind of residual effects of this past year, March 15, 2020 to you know, March 15, 2021, I'm sure we'll be reeling for quite a while. But there's two ways to see it. I mean, there's also, you know, and that's what you've really helped me with, Marcus, and these conversations and the conversations that we have, you know, off air, of which we've been in constant contact during this year because of the podcast and because of what you're going through and what the United States has been going through and just, you know, needing to talk about that, is looking at the silver linings and the positive things. And I think that, you know, I've spent this whole year, so from about, you know, a month before my daughter's second birthday to a month before my daughter's third birthday, more or less taking her to school and picking her up every day, not being away from, you know, because I remember December 2019, I was in New York and I was also in California, and it was the longest period of time consecutively that I had been away from my daughter. It was 9 nights, right? And I woke up one morning in New York and I was like, I can't do this. I can't stay away. I don't want to not wake up in the same house as her for nine consecutive nights, because I only have these years. You know, by the time she's 12, 13, she's not going to want to hang out with me. This is the time I have to hang out with her, where she actually loves hanging out with me. And all she wants to do is like play. And I'm always invited. You know, that door is going to come down hard. She's going to be like, no. You know, so I can't just like wait and say, we'll do it later. We'll do it later. So the biggest takeaway is the fact that I've landed in that family is number one, you know, but with that also comes the pain of I haven't seen my parents a lot this past year. And my parents are, you know, shout out Elaine Marabuco, you know, my parents are getting older, and 1 year of their lives is like, you know, it's worth a lot, right?
Yeah.
So I haven't been able to see them a lot. There's been that pain, you know, but music is music and food, Marcus. Music, food, and love. You know, family love is what's carried me through. Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I remember, you know, the last time I saw you in Harlem, I was sitting with Rakim having lunch, and I was about to just go down to my aunt on 116th Street, say goodbye to her, and then head out to Newark. And you came in the restaurant. This is the same day as you had to fire your entire staff at or let go of your entire staff at Red Rooster in Miami. And I could just see in your face that in the 36 hours earlier, we weren't at that point. I mean, now it was dead serious. Mm-hmm. And then I left. And I, you know, I sat on that plane, the 7-hour plane ride back to Stockholm. And I was like, I just couldn't grasp what I was leaving and what I was going to. I mean, I knew I was going to my daughter and my amazing partner, but like the world, I was really like flying into this uncertain world that we've been living in. So taking away all the plans that we meticulously make, you know, 1.5 years we spent setting up to be able to do a drop of Midnight at Harlem Stage. And then in 24 hours, just gone, just like forget about it. So all these meticulous plans that we make and take for granted, this privilege that I, you know, that I have to be able to take tomorrow for granted, gone. And so how do I learn to readjust to life in the way that maybe a majority or most likely a majority of the people on the planet live, where you can't take tomorrow for granted? It's been a lot, man. It's really been a lot. It's been healthy, you know. I also have to say shout out to West Side Gunn. He released his album Pray for Paris, and I would just walk around Södermalm, the island in Stockholm where I live, listening to West Side Gunn. You know, when my daughter was in daycare, and going to the grocery store, nice, buying groceries and planning on what to make for dinner, and that's what kind of saved me. And then I found my pen. I started writing rhymes again.
Beautiful.
I put one verse each day up on Instagram that made me feel like I did something. And then I went and cooked dinner for my family. And that led me back into the studio. I recorded an album. I released a book. And we started this moment, you know?
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of takeaways. But psychologically, mentally, it's been a one long, hard look in the mirror, really.
That was beautiful captured. And as you were telling this story, I was almost like compartmentalized March to July, and from July to October, and from October to January. Because, I mean, there will be books, there will be content produced about 2024 ever. But I think the unknown for me was the scariest part, right? And I would start with the positive. The positive is exactly what you said, that I started a routine with my son. Like, I take him to school and we talk. That's our one-on-one. We talk more about, you know, what's happening during that 25-minute walk. Then any other time of the day, actually, whether it's on scooter and I have to run after him or whether we walk, whatever it is, we create that really beautiful father-son bond and we discover things on the way. If we have 40 minutes, you know, I like to do it, leaves, we have 40 minutes and sometimes we're just late and we just got to run at it, but we discover stuff, right? And so that's been beautiful. And for me, as two creatives, as you and me, it's life is always about how do we find balance. And I think for me, it's been one of the hardest things in my life. I always struggled with finding balance because end of the day, food is food and people is a thing that I worked with all my life. And, you know, I'm in my head constantly thinking about these two things. And as a chef, as an entrepreneur, you constantly have to solve situations, whether it's on personalities or whether it's with ingredients. And now for what, for whom? And that unknown had never, you know, normally I'm booked out a year ahead, you know, for what, for whom? And these things that we call each other so busy for what, you know, so it's really been questioning all of that. But out of the positive things, I would say also I found balance, a better balance in my life. I think my wife and I, we got even closer. Maybe we got closer because of the scared. I don't know. But this is, it's, we did. And we had to figure out how to solve things on our own in a way that will be, you know, I think all couples go through. But those scary days when I put my gloves on, I put my mask on, and I went to the store. I had to wait for 1 hour outside to get into the store and then cook for my family. Those were scary. But then also to build off that, to still to this day, look at Jason, collectively, we built this moment. We did something when we were pushed in our corner. But I also got a lot of strain from handing out food, meeting my new regulars. Not the regular from downtown, there were lawyers and doctors. Not the regular from around the corner that, you know, were Harlemites. But homeless people that started to, the word got out that we started to hand out food together with World Central Kitchen. Those regulars that maybe I haven't seen them before, or maybe I haven't worked, done enough of them before. We went from serving 300 people a day, 400 people a day, all the way up to 1,500 people a day. And the line changed too, the people in the line. People came with buses to the line, eventually with cars. People from all Upper Manhattan came to our restaurant because they knew there were two meals a day to be had there. So this time, did not just forget, changed me on this spring, it forever changed me. Those next 3 months of 2020, I will never, ever forget. And to the listeners, thank you for coming on this journey that we're still shaping, by the way. You were able to do your album. I was able to do The Rise, the book that has been transformative. And we've been able to build a fund out of called Black Business Matters Matching Fund that we've been able to like support people in this crisis. So there is many things that has come out of this, and without COVID, the election would not have had the same outcome. We could actually say that now. I was very uncomfortable saying that before. That's the truth. So now we have that to look at, right? That we do have a new outlook in America. And thirdly, not necessarily related to COVID, but the social justice conversation that happened in this country sort of like got even a higher temperature because people were at home and people can follow news in a different way. So that pressure cooker led to actually systemic things that hopefully is going to be kept. So as an optimist, I want to sort of like think about what 2020 and now 2021 has given us and is going to give us. And I was scared, Jason, but now I'm hopeful. And I feel very, very privileged to first have access to healthcare and my family, but also to be here and to be able to do things like this, and to be able to express myself as a creative.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
To cap this off, probably not going to be done this year, but yesterday we actually launched and we announced that we're going to build a new restaurant called Hav and Mar. And Hav,
oh, right.
Yeah, Hav, as you know, means
Hav,
ocean. Means yeah. Ocean, and it goes back to my island of Smergen. And Mar means honey in Amharic. And going to be this, the front store is going to just be seafood, and the back door will be just vegetarian. And so it's all about health, truly, truly just thinking about sustainability. And these type of conversations, when you go on your long walks, this is what I've been thinking about. What can I give back to the next generation? I was like, part of it is Ethiopia, part of it is Sweden, but also this environmental thing that we have to think about. So I'm not sure I would have done Hav and Mar without this very interruptive year, but also the inspiration that an interruption really created creatively.
It is beautifully put, Marcus. And, you know, that energy that you have and that perspective is also what I really, again, I've thanked you a lot of times and I will keep thanking you for sharing that with me too. And having the luxury of being able to, you know, when I wasn't listening to West Side Gun walking around Södermalm, I was on the phone with you, you know, because you had that time and I had that time and we could have these conversations and record so many of them, which built this podcast. But tell me more about the new restaurant. Is it going to be called Hav and Mar?
Yeah. And for me, this is a love letter to New York City. It's a love letter to the two cultures that I represent, the Swedopian in me. But Hav, I'm not just above the ocean, also underneath. Seaweed's going to be part of this, right? Saving the ocean is going to be part of this. So it's all about understanding what's in the ocean, how do we take care of it, how do we make it more sustainable, and the other side about thinking about plant-based and moving forward in those ways that we don't have the answer. I don't have all of the answers, but if I'm going to push and leave my house and leave my wife and son, I want to push towards something positive, and I want to give young professionals a chance to work in the most inspirational environment possible and give our audience a way to dine around that. And, you know, Chelsea for me, you know, where it is going to be in Chelsea. And for me, Chelsea has always been the place where creativity, where the artist in New York has been, and to be able to continue to build on that. You know, we get offered places constantly. They're always saying no. And I was like, you know what? Out of this horrible, you know, this very challenging year, what would be more powerful but actually to start something fresh, new, and really highly original? So I'm excited. It's going to take a year. But you know, that will be, it's a love letter, really, to the city and to my background.
And I mean, you know, congratulations, Marcus. And again, it's just a testament to just the unstoppable creative force that is you, you know, and your unique way of blending your roots, your multifaceted cultural background into food and that storytelling that is your food. You know, I know on the menu, you know, I see something on the menu of Red Rooster and I'm like, yeah, of course Marcus put gravlax on injera and serves it in Harlem, you know, and that is just, that's W.E.B. Du Bois plus one, you know, it's that it's taking the doubleness and making it into the tripleness. And now you're bringing Toscog into Chelsea. It's a beautiful thing, brother. And yes, I'm behind you 100%. As you know, I've had this aversion to eating fish for a long time, but I've actually, during this year, eaten more fish and more seafood than ever before in my life. So I'll be ready for Hov when it opens.
What's the name of your album? What were you going to call it? Have you decided?
My album is called Du Gam La Dunia. So it's kind of a wordplay. Yeah, it's a wordplay on the first line of the Swedish national anthem that goes Du Gamla Du Fria. And so it just speaks to the kind of transitional age that I'm in, you know, from having become a father quite recently and my daughter being the new and me the old, but also the world having forever changed, you know.
Can you just translate? These two words?
Literally, it means you old, you new. And the first line of the Swedish national anthem is you old, you free, right? And the you know, the past year has changed the society of humans, the world of humans forever. We will not be the same. We went from the old world and we're not yet arrived at the new world, isn't built yet, but it's, you know, it's inevitably coming.
When did that title come to you? Was it, because it wasn't always there, right?
It wasn't always there, but I was working on a track and I had written one chorus for it and I didn't think the chorus was good enough. I was sitting with my dear brother Cords, shout out to my brother Jens Resch, who together with Patrick Collin produced all the beats. And I was sitting with my other brother, Drew Lamar, and we were just vibing on, you know, how could we make this chorus better? And that phrase just popped up, Du Gam La Dunia. And Jens was like, yo, you should call the album that. And I'm like, you're absolutely right. And there we were, you know. And then the album had its title. It's the same as when I was writing A Drop of Midnight. I don't know, you know, how it was for you when you wrote Yes Chef for The Rise, but I know how it was with The Rise. You were thinking a lot about the title. When I started writing A Drop of Midnight, I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And I was just so kind of caught up in I just have to keep writing. I want to climb this mountain. I didn't think about the title. And I had just landed in New York and Amelie was like, yo, let's go to the Whitney because there's a painter on exhibit that I really think you're going to appreciate. And I'm like, okay. And it was Archibald Motley exhibit. And I was just blown away by this African-American painter's many decades old art that we were looking at. And there was a portrait of a woman And next to it, the curator's note was that Archibald Motley liked to paint portraits of Black people with different skin tones to show the kind of the multicolorism of Blackness. And it mentioned a book by Nella Larsen called Passing. And I just took note of that. And then next day I was at the Strand. I picked up Nella Larsen's Passing. I'm reading the foreword and boom, A Drop of Midnight was right there, the phrase. And I'm like, okay, that's, you know, the universe gave me that title. So that's how it goes sometimes with, sometimes you can't go out, or for me anyway, I don't go out and try to find the title, but it has to find me. Alavit Himlin, same thing, you know, just in conversation with a man in Ghana, he says it to me. I'm like, thank you, you know.
Beautiful. You know,
sometimes
we'll be
the universe smiles at us. Tell
you know
me.
What would be proud of? So I always feel like you're our generation's Cornelius. And I feel like Cornelius was this incredible Swedish, or Dutch actually, but lived in, spent most of his time in Sweden. You know, he wrote, I mean, I would say like it's Sweden's Bob Dylan probably.
Kind of a mix of Bob Dylan. He's just a mix of Bob Dylan, John Lennon. And it's just a very, very talented songwriter.
Yeah, but he would have been proud of that title. He would have loved that title.
Well, thank you so much, brother. It's that's a lot to live up to. But on the positive note, there's so much that we, you know, in this past year from when I left Harlem, you know, to now, the world has changed. We've changed, but we persevere. We are also the lucky ones. We're still here, you know, and the fact that we're still here, you know, almost getting close to 3 million people infected in the United States, getting close to 550,000 dead, 13,200 dead in Sweden, you know, just like about, I think, 3 million lives in the world. Lost. Let me double check that. Yeah. 2.7 million lives lost worldwide. We're still here, you know, and we have this fantastic resilience as human beings to be able to persevere crises. And especially living in a country like Sweden that has been, you know, free from war and crises for over a century. And we've persevered through this crisis. It's still going on. It's not over. But we're also still here. We're the lucky ones. We're still around, you know. And to take that and do something with that, you know, and not take tomorrow for granted and not take what all these things that we have for granted.
I hope, you know, one thing that I hope people do is to actually to start to see the things that we take for granted and appreciate them, right? Mm. That this, out of this crisis got to come better empathy. It's got to come a way to appreciate the small daily victories that you have. Like one of the, one small example, but a great example of that actually was one of the posts that you did when Maxie took her first picture of you, right?
Mm, right, right, right.
I love that. And you posted it on Instagram. Like people might not say that that's a big deal or not, but for me, it was a big deal because it shows that, you know, you obviously shared something very personal, but it's also there lies the day to day, and there lies for me these things that when everything is dark and you pick up the newspaper or you get your media or whatever you do, like however you get your content, it's a lot of negative news out there. And just like you said, yes, 550,000 people have died in the US and counting. 2,000 people a day are still dying out of this crisis. We're not out of it by far. But you also have to look at all the positives, the small positive things that you collectively say. When you say today was a good day, it is Maxie taking that shot. It is Zion running in the park, right? It is these small images that we build into this one image. It's almost like cubism that builds it into this one day. Yes, today was a good day, just like our friend Ice Cube said, right? And I think it's very important to however you, whatever you have to do to manifest day, for some people it's yoga, for some people it's walking in the park, for some people it's FaceTiming with their friends. Do all of that and acknowledge, because just like you said, we are still here, and live it to the fullest. But at the same time, think about someone like myself now that have the shot. I'm still going to wear a mask, right? I'm still going to be cautious, because I have to think about my fellow community.
It's the example you set too. And COVID has really shown us, nature has shown us that, you know, this beautiful word, Ubuntu, is it's the truth. It's fact. You know, it's shown how connected we are. The air that I exhale could actually, you know, kill you. You know, if I'm doing bad, then you might be doing bad. We are all connected. Everything is connected. You know, nature is connected to us. We're connected to each other. That's what I hope we also remember to carry with us for the rest of our days.
A while back ago, we asked you this question. What was your big takeaway from 2020? And here are some of the most brilliant answers. And once again, thank you for hitting us up and giving us your feedback. The show wouldn't work without it.
Gustav Ruth here. Just want to let you know that I've learned being on your own, deep in your own thoughts, staying safe doesn't mean you're staying away. It means you're staying close to yourself, your goals, staying true to your attitude.
Hi, my name is Alicia from Richmond, Virginia. 2020 has taught me the importance of rejuvenation and getting off of the grind. There's been so much pain and loss, but there's also been opportunity to slow down and enjoy things that many of us were in such a hurried state to be able to relish and enjoy. So that's what 2020 has taught me. Thank you.
I think this year's most important learning has been my renewed faith in human solidarity. Like, this year we've seen neighbors, like utter strangers, step up and help when they have elderly neighbors or sick friends, calling them and asking if they need groceries, offering to help cook for them, being there socially but virtually with the Zoom hangouts and stuff like that. So it's been a renewed faith in just human interaction and human solidarity towards each other. And that's been really cool about this year.
2020, year of doom, year of Zoom. This moment in time, rhymes like dimes. As boys, they were outcasts, but now they rock podcasts and hit you with knowledge that'll leave you with whiplash. The one wears a mustache, the other cooks succotash. They overcame oceans crashing, waves on the beach. They don't lecture and preach, but they inform and teach. They continue to reach us, all with their interviews. Marcus and Timbuktu have served us a mental stew and fed us with Ubuntu.
Thank you all our listeners. Follow us on Instagram at This Moment Podcast. Our email is thismomentpodcast@gmail.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.